accession number 27302, Reel 3.
Mr. Dobbs, Reel 3. In your initial training, Mr. Dobbs, you would also again be training how to take up a guard duty. Initial training.
Yes.
And what would you be guarding in your training camp?
It could be battalion headquarters, for example, or anywhere that's of vital importance, such as you may be sent out to guard a reservoir, the dams of a reservoir.
And also guards at the gate, at the entrance gates.
Yes, and also along the dam of the reservoir.
Did you do fire pickets?
Yes.
And what was the routine of a fire picket?
Well, you're more or less on standby in case anything did take fire. You had your buckets of water and buckets of sand. That sort of thing.
And your stirrup pumps, I think you
would say. Stirrup pumps, yes. Yes.
How often did guards come around in the initial days?
Well, there was guards every night, but different people allocated these guard duties.
So how often would you say you would do a guard duty yourself?
Maybe once a week I would be picked for guard duty.
The drill people that you had, you've mentioned Sergeant Hall, I think, was one of them.
Oh, yes, that was our first sergeant, yes.
And you got on well with them?
Yes, although when we moved away from Brecon, he stayed there, ready for the next intake.
Was he an old man?
No, he was only around about 30, I would think, in those days. He had been a peacetime soldier.
And you would have your own commanding officer, presumably, your own lieutenant?
Well, in those days, we didn't have officers for very long before they were changed around, you know. I've lost count of the number of officers I've had in charge of us.
How long was the basic training?
Well, the basic training was 10 weeks. And then you were moved on to proper regiment sort of thing.
Was there a final parade? Did you have a final passing out parade?
Not that I can remember. No. When we left Brecon, we moved out to a camp outside Brecon to allow the Dunkirk evacuees to come into take over our barracks because they had nowhere to go.
Where did you move to?
We moved to a little camp. It was called Derren Lions, specially made of Nissen huts.
What were they like to be accommodated in?
Very well, really, but the likes of the ablutions were outside on your latrines, they were just holes dug in the ground. There was nothing comfortable, it was just an existence.
Had you at this point in time joined a battalion?
No, we hadn't got into the a proper battalion until we moved to Blundell Sands, well, that was later.
So how long were you?
At Derren Lions, after duty, we used to walk back into Brecon for spend the evenings. And on one particular night, this car pulled up. It was one of our officers, camp officers. "Would you like a lift into the town?" "Yes, please." So he drove us into town, And we got out there, and he drove on. We didn't know where he was going. So we thought it was very kind of him, because none of the officers had ever done that before, and there wasn't many who had cars anyway. But later on, we found out that this officer, Lieutenant Johns, he used to take the soldiers, give the soldiers a lift into town, and he would drive through to Brecknock Beacons. And it turned out that we didn't find this out until about 2 years later, that he was a German spy. And he used to go up on Brecknock Beacons, and he used to flash his torch as the German spotted planes coming over. So that was a bit of a shock when we found that out.
So ultimately, as you say, was he arrested during your time there?
No. We moved away, and the Sergeant Major that we left behind at the barracks, he joined us about 1942-43. And we got on talking about this nice officer, Lieutenant John, who used to give us a lift into the town. And he said, yes, Lieutenant John, he said, the CO was getting concerned about his actions. And he asked me to find out what was happening after he dropped the troops off in the town. So the Sergeant Major, along with another lieutenant, they follow the car, but at a distance where he wasn't aware that he was being followed. And they noticed that he was going towards Brecknock Beacons. And this went on night after night. So the Sergeant Major and this officer goes up in advance. They hid their car, their jeep, and they lay in wait. And luckily enough, this car pulled up. And you could only drive so far up the Brecknock Beacons before you had to go the rest of the way on foot. This officer pulled up in the car, and he got out and he walked on up the hill. And the Sergeant Major and this officer stood by and watched his performance. And they noticed that he was signalling to this plane that came over nearly every night about the same time, you know. And when this officer came back down the hill, they arrested him. And that was the last we heard of him. So I would imagine that he would have been held up as a spy and charged accordingly. Yeah, quite a shock that was.
How long were you at this Derren barracks? Derren camp?
At Brecon?
No, the other one.
Oh, Derren Lines. Well, we moved from Derren Lines to Buckland Estate, near Crickhowell.
What were you doing there?
Now, again, we were on guard in different places. And on this particular night, I was picked with six others to go and guard Talabont Reservoir. And we did our shift. This other sentry and myself, we were on in pairs on duty, 2 hours on and 4 hours off. We came off our shift, and another two went on. And about midnight, we heard this shout, "Halt, who goes there?" And then, "Halt, or I'll fire." So we rushed out of the tent to find out what was happening. And it seemed that there was a railway line running from Merthyr to Brecon, a single track coming along the side of the mountain. And this signalman was coming off duty. And he was coming along the reservoir dam on his push bike, and the sentries could only see the light approaching. And that's how they challenged him. So when he explained who he was allowed to go. Following morning, when he came back up the hill, we were standing on a chat because we were waiting to go on duty. And this signalman came up, he was panting because it was a hell of a steep hill to climb, pushing his bike. And I asked him how he felt after what happened the night before. He said, I nearly done something in my trousers, he said, when I was challenged, when that fellow threatened to shoot me. So I said, by the way, last night we saw a light on the side of the mountain and it was travelling from left to right and then it vanished. I said, is there a road up there? He said, there's an old track leading to the shepherd's cottage. He said, the light you saw must have been the nurse, the midwife, because the shepherd's wife was expecting. But, that accounted for the light that we saw.
Any other memories of your stay there before we move on?
Well, when we came back down to Buckland House, that was the big mansion that we were in. As we got off the truck, we heard this voice shouting orders from the other side of the house. We recognised it to be the Sergeant Major who was attached to this place. He didn't move on. He wasn't our own Sergeant Major. He was like the garrison Sergeant Major of that particular place. And we heard him shouting his orders. And while we go around the front of the house, we saw just one solitary figure on parade. He was dressed in battle order, except that he didn't have a rifle and bayonet with him. Now, every order the Sergeant Major was giving this lad was done at a double. So I could see he was bloody distressed, the way he was sweating, where the steam was coming off him. He was that hot. So I said to one of the lads who had been standing watch, what's going on here? He said, I don't know what that lad's done, but he's on what they call pack drill. It was a First World War punishment. So we stood and watched while this lad was doing all this about turn and left wheel and right wheel and all at the double. And after a little while, the Sergeant Major pulled his watch out of his trousers pocket and then he shouted, halt! Stand at ease. So the lad halted and he stood at ease. And the Sergeant Major walked up to him. He said, I hope that's taught you a lesson. So the soldier came up to attention and he said, Sergeant Major, the men call you Snaky Thomas. I call you a snaky-eyed bastard. So with that, the Sergeant Major called another corporal and two private soldiers to march him away back to the barrack room, to the guard room. I don't know what he had done, this lad, but he was certainly suffering.
What was the usual punishments given out for...
Usually CB, you know, confined to barracks and that sort of thing, but never punishment on this scale. I don't think it would be allowed today, anyway.
You didn't get involved with or saw people being punished, you know, in the having to paint coal or
these kinds of things? No, I saw none of that, like.
There's none of that in your experience?
It might have been done, but I didn't see it at first hand.
So where did you go to after that?
Well, we went at different places along the south coast. No, from Buckland House, we knew we were getting moved, so we were marched back to Brecon and boarded the train, the troop train waiting in the station. And that took us from Brecon to Hereford, and the train stopped at Hereford station. So we were wondering where we were going. So the driver came past our window and one of the lads said, where are you taking us? He said, this is as far as I'm going, we're changing engines here. So eventually they changed engines and we moved off again, heading north, and we went through Liverpool to a little place called Blundell Sands, that's between Southport and Liverpool. And that's where we joined the Southwest Border of our first regiment. It was called the Brecknock Battalion of the Southwest Borderers.
And what number was that? What numbered battalion?
It was just classed as a Brecknock Battalion of the Southwest Border, 38th Welsh Infantry Division. And the CO was Colonel Wales, OM, Order of Merit. I don't know what he had that for, I'm sure. But he was a nice fella, and he was a peacetime soldier too. And from there, from Buckland, we did a route march to a new camp down near Liverpool, and it turned out on Bootle Golf Course. And we had to pitch our tents around the perimeter of the golf course under the hedges and that sort of thing. By now, the Germans were coming over every night, bombing Liverpool and them places. And one particular night, there was a heavy raid on Liverpool, and they bombed the Bryant Mays match factory. They used to be matchmakers in those days. And they turned this factory into an ammunition factory, and it employed hundreds of women. And one night, the Germans came over and they bombed this factory, and there was an awful lot of women killed there. My mate and I went down the next morning from our camp at Bootle Golf Course to have a look around, and it was in a hell of a mess. So they were still digging out victims, like. But they wouldn't let us help with the rescue because the walls of the buildings were so insecure. And so we had to leave them carry on with it. So we walked back up to the camp and continued much the same old soldiering. We used to do our PT, running around the golf course and that sort of thing. And then there was a lull. The planes hadn't come over two or three nights. So my mate said, let's go down to the pictures for a change. We hadn't been in the pictures since we was at Brecon. And Redo. So we go to the pictures, and we no sooner got in than on the screen flashed air raid in progress, and we could hear the sirens outside. So that came on screen, anybody who wished to leave may do so, but for those who want to stay, we will continue showing the film. But we had been told in advance, in the event of an air raid, we had to make our way back to camp. So we left the cinema, we left our seats in the cinema and came out to the fire. And there was this there was this young lady there crying at the doorway because the raid was still on. I said, what are you worried about? She said, well, I'm worried about my family because I would like to know if they're safe. I said, well, where do they live? She said, it's about a quarter of a mile away from here. Cunard Road. Well, we knew where that was because we had to walk past it from our camp to the cinema. So I put my tin hat on her head and I grabbed her hand. I said, right, come on, let's run. So we ran like hell and keeping close into the buildings so that the slates were coming over us instead of on the shrapnel and that, to avoid being hit, kept in close to the buildings. And every footstep was a crunch of glass, broken glass. Eventually we got to her house. Her mother was waiting on the gate. She was worried too what happened to her daughter, right? But it we handed them over quite safe, and then we continued our way to camp. And on the way back from the cinema, we had to pass over Leeds Liverpool Canal, like a humpback bridge. And we stood on this bridge and looked back to the docks, towards the docks. And the sky was red from all the fires that were blazing at the time. So, after a few moments, we continued our way back, and Jerry came back over. He used to have the habit of going out to sea and wait for the all clear to sound and then double back. And this is what he'd done this night. He doubled back. And as we were going down this road, we rushed into an old concrete bus shelter. Well, we tried to get in, but it was full of people. So we had hid in some doorways until the planes moved over, and then we continued our way back to camp. But Jerry was still hanging around, and he was dropping bombs near where the camp was. I said to my mate, that sounds very much like he's near our place. So when we got back to camp, the planes had gone, they had finished their raid and they had gone by then. When we got back to camp, one of the lads in the tent, a bomb had dropped close by, and the shrapnel had ripped holes in his tent. And in his pocket he had a half a crown, and he showed us that half a crown was split in two as if it had been sawn with a hacksaw, and that was caused by blast. His trouser leg was ripped right open, right down the seam, and yet his skin was never touched. It was amazing. And when one of the officers got to find out, he wanted to buy the two half crowns off the lad, two sections of the half crown off the lad, but he wouldn't sell it, he was keeping it as a souvenir. And that was an amazing sight, that.
It must have been very distressing for you to see this going on.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, especially when it was your own. Because we were like one big happy family. We'd been together a long time, you know. That was a thing, you see.
Did this make you more resolved to kind of get at the Germans? Did you feel anger towards them?
No, not in that respect. But we were happy that he had got off as late as he did. And in those tents, we had to dig 3 foot down inside the tents to be below ground level. And we had to leave there. In order to keep the tent pole upright, we had to leave a pillar of earth in the centre of the tent. And of course, by the time there was 8 or 10 men in the tent, you couldn't stretch your legs up because of this pillar of earth in the centre holding the tent pole up.
Were you sleeping on the earth?
We had our ground sheets, yes.
Not very comfortable?
Not very comfortable at all, no.
And what were you doing as in the area? What were you doing? Were you training in infantry tactics? Or?
Well, we did our usual training and that, you know, and assault courses and that. But I think the object was to keep us near the coast because we were more or less on coastal defence duty.
What time would this be? What date?
This would be around about November 1940. And then we moved from there to Ascot Race Course. And for our PT, we used to have to go around the race course. I was picked to do guard duty there. A VIP was coming. And six of us had to be exactly the same height, much the same weight, and we all had to be immaculately dressed, and we get out on parade outside the headquarters of the entrance to Ascot Racecourse, and this party started walking up from their cars with our commanding officer with them, and it turned out to be the Duke of Kent, no, sorry, Duke of Gloucester. he had walked around the ranks, and then he complimented us on the turnout. But mentioning the Duke of Gloucester, when we was at Liverpool, I was picked there for the Guard of Honour, for the Duke of Kent. So that was another one of my experiences. Of course, he got lost in an airplane crash, I believe.
How did they strike you, these royal people?
Well, I was surprised at how small he was, the Duke of Kent. A very short man and thin in stature, I know. But the Duke of Gloucester was a heavier built man.
What were you doing at Ascot?
At Ascot, well, I mean, the soldiers were stationed everywhere in those days, wherever they were. They could pitch camp. There were so many soldiers on the go in those days. But, I don't know what specific purpose was in pitching us in Ascot on the race course. I suppose they were short of barrack rooms and that sort of thing. But while we were there at the time of the London Blitz. And that's not very far from Ascot. And the sky was red at night from the houses and buildings on fire from the raids.
Were you doing more infantry training?
We were constantly drills and training and lectures and whatever. It was all repeats, more or less. But it was to keep you fit, you know, sort of route marches.
How long were you at Ascot?
I would think about 7 or 8 weeks, I would think. We were there during the Christmas of 1940. And we'd have our meals in what was a restaurant there, Ascot Restaurant. What a marvellous place. And we had wonderful meals there. Although it had been taken over by the troops, the catering staff had all been trained at Aldershot Catering Corps. And they were all spot on. And there was a sergeant major in charge of them back. God, he was strict and all on discipline and cleanliness. But a wonderful occasion. And with it being Christmas Day, all the officers and sergeants had to wait on us. So that was a bonus. And in the end, as we were all Welsh lads, to show our appreciation, everybody was singing, you know, formed a choir and sang. And the cooks and that, they were delighted with the reception they got.
Well, so the Welsh are famous singers, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, well, they like to sing. Yeah.
And did all Welsh battalions have their own choir?
No, just the lads, they get together and they sing.
What happened after you? After that?
From Ascot we went to Aldershot. Aldershot is a big barrack town there. And we were there a few weeks. And then, again, I was picked to go with a truck driver. And we had to go to Brighton, to the Ordnance Depot, just outside Brighton, to pick up a load of tents. We wondered what they were for. But when we got back to our camp, the next move we had was to Petworth Park. And we were in tents. That was what these tents were for. But in the woods there, we were surrounded by adders. Very uncomfortable to see bloody adders running around, you know, just outside your tent.
Yeah. So, what date would this be?
Well, this would be I just can't imagine, trying to offhand, no, because we was at Ascot at Christmas. And then we went to Aldershot, and from there, it'd be around about February or March time, I would imagine.
1941?
One, yes.